It's been a good year. The first Sunday I was here, I asked you to do two things that I'd like to renew on another year's contract. I asked you to trust me and to go with me or get rid of me. But I don't want to play churchy games. I told you I would not try to please you, I would not try to make you happy, that I wanted to serve God. I still feel that way, and I still want you to go with me another year or get rid of me. As to trust, there's no way I can express how very much you have trusted me. You've given me latitude. You've been very patient. You have been very understanding. You've overlooked a lot of personality faults, and you've given me the benefit of the doubt. I want to thank you for that, and I know that's not easy to do. I really saw it this week in microcosm. I was at Lakeland, staying in a motel with a pastor friend of mine from Miami, Walter Edwards. We've known each other for hundreds of years. And Walter was standing downstairs on the parking lot, and I was up on the balcony getting ready to go in the room, and he yelled up and he said, "Martin, throw me the ice bucket so I don't have to come back down." So I went in and I got the ice bucket, and I held it out and I said, "Catch it, Edwards." He said, "Martin, I got water in it." Now, could you believe he'd even think such a thing? I said, "You catch it and find out." He said, "Martin, I'm wearing my best suit. Does that thing have water in it?" I said, "Trust me, Edward." And for the first time, really standing there, I realized what I'd asked you to do. He said, "Martin, does that thing have water in it?" I said, "You're going to have to catch it to find out." Now, this is the laziest guy in Florida, and I knew he didn't want to go all the way to the end and come back up and all the way back down to the room to get get the ice bucket. So I said, "You're going to either have to come get it or catch it." And so he walked over, and I can still see his face looking up at me, rampant paranoia, and he said, "Drop it." I held it completely flat as I turned it loose so it wouldn't wiggle at all coming down. Didn't want him to know until it got to him. And he caught it, and I know what you're thinking, but no, it was empty. But I asked you to do the same thing. I asked you to trust me. And I want to thank you for that. That's not easy for churches. I've noticed this over the years. Churches tend to gauge ministers on ministers they've had. Now, everything a minister they've had before who did good things, the new minister doesn't get benefit for it. Because we think, well, nobody can do it as good as so-and-so. So we don't give the new minister that sort of input. But anything an old minister did, either in this church or a minister we transferred from, we tend to think, "I'll bet he's going to do the same thing." And so that's part of the ballgame. Plus, some of you are very suspicious, highly manipulative, and you think the new minister is going to do the same thing. You're projecting. And so it's very hard to trust sometimes because we've got all of our secret problems that we wonder if anybody else is the same way. And I want to thank you. You have trusted me, and I appreciate that. And I've seen times in meetings where you have gone out of your way to give me the benefit of the doubt. I appreciate it. We're still in a race. The title of the sermon today is "Never Run a Race with Your Foot in a Bucket." I'm not going to spend a lot of time developing that theme, but just stating it. There are many buckets. There are egos, traditions, conceptualizing, many things that we can put our foot in it and try to run this great race only to be slowed down. But I think Paul says it better for us than anybody else can, and I want us to simply look at it. This, in essence, if you want to really know, is a State of the Church address. I do this every year, where we are and where I think we need to be going. I've never preached from this passage, but I don't know why. He says it. Number one, he says, "Forget what is behind and do your best to reach what is ahead." You know, often somebody tells us you need to forget the bad, that you can't really go on, you can't climb the mountain, You can't get your life back together unless you forget the bad that's happened to you, the death, the tragedy, or whatever it is. I say that is equally true, perhaps even more true, when you're talking about the positive, the good. For so many times, when great things have happened to us, we tend to sit around, and rather than forgetting it and going on, we cling to it and let mediocrity become sufficient for all the goals yet to remain. And there's no question but that this has been a great year. It's been an exciting year. Ministers at Converse like to come up to you and say, "Well, how'd it go? How'd you like being there after your first year?" And I said, "Tremendous. Nobody believes you." But I say it anyway. Great. I loved it. It was an exciting year. I thank God for it. Statistically, I'll hit on just briefly because I think it's rather irrelevant. Our church school is up 135%. That's good, especially when almost every other church school's down. I start to say that's good. That's not good. Church attendance is up 205%. That's good. Giving has been very, very good, contrary to some of the talk and some of the evidence. I'll tell you why. This church has lost in the last 12 months 5 of its 8 top givers out of move, transfers. We are in a recession. Church giving is down in most places. But we are $8,000 ahead of this time last year. We're not reaching our budget, but I thank you. Giving has been good. Spiritual growth and deeper commitment is our best statistic, but is immeasurable. But I say that and leave it to say this, that God has richly blessed us, and I don't in any way discount that, and nor do I discount the hard work that has caused Him to bless us. It has been a good year, but that can be a very disarming and a very lethal problem. When I was in high school, Avon Park, Florida, baseball was king. In the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, it was still the national sport. And my high school team was one of the best in the state, had been in the tournament for years, had won the tournament, state tournament for years, back in the days when there were no Class A's and B's and C's, but any team played every team to get on top. And my senior year in 1952, we were looking again for the state title. We wanted it badly. We knew we could have it. We were supposed to be the second best team in the state, but we knew better. Osceola High School in Kissimmee was supposed to be the best. They were coming to Avon Park for a regular season game, and all the papers were saying the winner of that game would be the state champ. They had the best pitcher in Florida. He was sought after by about every pro team in America. He was good. He could fog a baseball. You know what that means? That means the umpire said he threw it, but you weren't sure. He could really throw a baseball. We beat him 10-8. We put 3 of those balls over the left field stand. We were tremendous. The next week, we went down to Fort Meade. Who's Fort Meade? A little old rinky-dink high school out in the phosphate mines. We strolled out onto their little old field, which was nothing compared to ours. No stadium, nothing. We scattered our newspaper reports all over the field. Don't you like our nice new professional-looking uniforms? You know what they did to us? You know what they did. They destroyed us. They absolutely wiped us out. This is what Paul's saying. Forgetting what is behind. Good or bad. You don't build on yesterday. You build from it. And we do thank God. But he says, reach forward to what is still out there. The great thing. And there's so much ahead. I still say that one of the great things we need to reach for is that Gainesville still so desperately needs a synthesis church. I've said this before. I don't know how to say it without sounding condescending, and perhaps it is, but I say it the way I see it. In university cities, there tend to be 2 basic categories of churches. One are the hard-headed, hard-sell, hard-sell fundamentalists who say, this is the way it is. We give you no room to think. Take it or leave it. And then on the other end of the spectrum are those churches that are just plain frightened of the university, who say, please listen to what we're saying. Doesn't it sound relevant, quote unquote? Won't you accept us so we don't feel so frightened? Every university city in America needs a synthesis church. A church between those two polarities that says, God expects this much out of you, and it's not optional, but you can use your own personality and your own mind. That's still before us. We so desperately need a teaching church. People are wanting to know in the church school about God. People who tend to graduate from Methodist church school do not know about God. Methodists are notorious for ignoring the Bible in the Sunday school. I saw a cartoon not too long ago. A teacher was talking to her children, and she was saying, who was Adam and Eve? I may have said this. I don't know. It just came to me. And this little boy, who was the first man and woman? And the little boy said, Hoss and Eve. And he said, no, it was Adam and Eve. He said, no. He said, it was Adam and Eve. He said, well, I knew it was one of them Cartwright boys. That had to be a Methodist Sunday school. I have no question but that was a Methodist Sunday school. This is what we're reaching for here, to have a Sunday school where children in the smallest grades all the way through know something about their faith. That still, forget what is behind and reach for that which is before. And a church in mission, Paul says, forget what is behind, no matter how good or bad, and reach to that which is above, before. And then secondly, he says, so I run straight toward the goal, which is God's call through Christ Jesus. I run straight toward the goal. When I was in college, I was sitting in class one day in Kentucky discussing the problems of governing and directing your lives. All of a sudden, the professor said, I want all you guys to get up and follow me out. There were 18 of us, small class, and we got up and we walked to the edge of the campus. There was about a foot of snow on the ground. And we walked to a large pasture right on the edge of the campus. And he said, I want you to walk as straight as you can to the far end of this pasture. Everybody's glad to be outside. Who cares if the professor was out of his mind? We just simply started out. He said, walk as straight as you can. We walked to the far end of the pasture, which was about 10 acres. And he said, all right, stop, turn around, and look. I asked you to walk as straight as you could. We looked back, and there were 18 lines through the snow, all in varying degrees of zig and zag. Then he moved us on further down the fence line and said, now I want you to walk back to the other end, but this time I want you to pick out a fence post and I want you to look at it. I don't want you to take your eyes off of it for anything. And so we did. We walked back down that sloping pasture and I set my eyes, I still see that fence post. I set my eyes on that fence post, and I went straight for it. When I got to the end, we all got to the end. He said, all right, turn around and look. We turned around, and in the snow were 18 lines about as straight as a human being could make them. He said, the difference is you had a goal, and you kept your eye on it. That's what Paul is saying. So I run straight for the goal. I want to say to you that I am totally incompatible to a rather prevalent Methodist concept that says, take this church as a stepping stone to a bigger church. I am not in that ball game. I turned down a bigger church to come here. I want to minister here, and I want to stay. I would like to see the synthesis biblically oriented church built here that gives people an option to really find God and yet be the distinct personality God means for us to be in a university town and anywhere else. My goal is not a bigger church. Our goal is Christ. I really and truly believe that the world has no inclination at all to listen any longer to the religious social club that so-called churches can be. I believe Jesus Christ has got to be that fence post at the end of our road. And the only way we're going to go straight as a human being can be, is to decide that we're not here to serve the Methodist bishop, and he'll be the first to say that. I really respect our bishop here in Florida, Joel McDavid. He'd be the first to say that. We're not here to serve these buildings or this denomination, but to lift up Jesus Christ, who is the Savior of the world, and who can bring meaning to the vacancy and the absence that we feel, so many of us, deep down in our souls. Our goal, because of this Christ, is evangelism. By evangelism, I don't mean institutional recruitment. I don't mean getting people to join the church. By evangelism, I don't mean a guy who comes into town and puts up a tent and folding chairs and gets all the money he can get and takes off. By evangelism, I mean exactly what the Greek says, and the Greek word evangelietes, which we translate evangelism, that literally means to bring the good news of God to the agony of man. To say to that human being, where do you hurt? And then to say, I can help. And he may say, I'm naked, and I say, I'll help you be clothed. He may say, I'm a refugee from a war-torn land, and I can say, I'll help you find a home. He may say, I am spiritually lost and religiously undone, and I can say, I can help you. He may say, I'm hungry, and I can say, I can find food for you. Evangelietes does not mean to get people to walk a sawdust trail. It does not mean to get them to join the church. It means to bring the good news of God to whatever their agony is, and this is our goal in Christ. We set it for the new year. It's the fence post out there, so where we must go. And to nurture. To help people grow in their faith. This is what I see for the coming year. To really lift up Christ. To meet the needs of people, whatever those needs are. And to grow in our own lives. Now, what is it going to take to do that? Number one, it's going to take the right spirit. It's going to take a spirit of love and kindness and friendliness. People need to walk in a church and know that somebody cares. Know that somebody appreciates that they're there. Know that they are loved and accepted. I think one of the great things we've got going for us here is that it is a church where people can be of unbelievable diversity of theological premise in their lives, and yet they love one another. The fact that we don't have to agree on every little thing here, but that the Spirit of Christ brings acceptability where it ought to be. That the liberal can give something to the conservative, and the conservative can give something to the liberal. We need the right spirit. The second thing we've got to make an adjustment on in this church is money. There's got to be greater priority understanding at this point. Let me just lay it out specifically. In the United Methodist Church in America today, and I find no exception here at Trinity as an exception to the rule, in this area at least, 13% of the congregation supports 6% of the budget. This is very limiting. The per capita giving of the average United Methodist in America today is $88 a year, or $1.69 a week. In other words, the average Methodist in a week's time spends more on a carton of cigarettes than they do for God's work. You've got to know how spiritually debilitating that is. The average Methodist spends more on a six-pack of beer in a week than they do for the church, for God's work. The average Methodist spends more on one movie in a week than they do for all of God's work in that same week. The average Methodist spends more for two decent golf balls, and that's not even good golf balls, that's just decent golf balls, than they do for God's work in that same week. Two things bother me about that. Number one is what it does to you. And secondly, how crippling it is to the great ministry that is before us. The average Methodist spends more money on one dress in a year than they give in that same year to God's work. We spend more on two pair of shoes than we do to God's work. Twice as much on our hobbies, and about 8% more on gator tickets. The average Gainesville Methodist. Now, the thing that so concerns me about that, and I don't care how self-serving this may sound, is that we are moving
And there's so much to be done. And so many of our homes are crippled. And so much of our outlook. You know, in the average church of every denomination, tithers always want to build. And the further down the scale you get, 80% to 90% of those who are opposed to building anything new to enlarge your ministry are the poorest givers in a church. Do you know that? You can go into any group, and when you're talking about a building expansion, if there are 50 voting, inevitably the tithers are for it. They want to build. They want to go. They want to grow. They never want to stop. But when you get down in the $1.69 bracket, now I know that's a very dangerous statement because there's some heavy givers who are opposed to certain buildings. And we're not getting ready to build anything new to think that's what I'm building up to. I'm just saying it's time that we came to realize that where our treasure is where our heart is. And where our heart is where we're going to put our money. And it's time we stop crippling our homes with adverse priorities that destroy the understanding of our children as far as reality and value goes. And it's time we really got into this thing on our church. For so often we give just what is left at the end of the week. I think the most exciting thing in the world to do is to take your check, take off the top 10%, and live on the rest, and it never runs out. And then there's another idea that goes like this. We consider Sundays missed as money saved. I'll laugh with you just so you won't feel self-conscious. You see, this hurts. When we talk about really being the church, we've got to tackle these issues. The water may be, the gospel may be as free as the water of life, but somebody's got to pay for the plumbing. It's that simple. How do we do it? Spirit, money, and willingness to get in and serve. A year ago, we had about 15 active people in the church. Right now, we need about 80 to really carry the workload. We're running about 65. Next year, we're going to need almost 100 because of an expanded program. Next fall, we're going to need between 60 and 70 teachers because of a double session. Next fall, we're going to need an awful lot of people saying, "Here am I, O God, send me." And then Paul comes down to the final statement where he says, all of us who are spiritually mature, and I understand that as saying a growing Christian rather than one who's already got it locked in and all the answers, all of us who are spiritually mature should have the same attitude. If, however, some of you do not, God will make this clear to you. But however that may be, let us go forward according to the same rules we have followed unto now. I like that phrase, however that may be. I believe the time is coming very soon where we must have a capital debt retirement drive in this church. Building no new buildings, just getting rid of some of this $200,000 debt. You may agree, you may not agree. Some of the things I have said this morning, you may find questionable. You may have to stand on the stage at the bottom and say, does it have any water in it? Is it going to ruin my music? I don't know. There's a lot of pro and con. But here's what he's saying. However that may be, whatever you think, let us move forward under the same rules that have brought us to where we are now. And those rules are very simple. To put our hands in the hand of the living God, and say that we are his church, that we do want to serve, that we do mean business about this thing of ministry, and that we will put him first, establish some real priority giving in our lives of our money and of our time, and really live in some honest degree of faith that we shall go for broke. We do have a race to run. It's a fun race. It's a rewarding race. It's an exciting race. And you don't run a race with your foot in a bucket. You kick free. You really trust God. You look forward to the goal that is out there, and you run with patience the race that's before you. And you know that if you really and truly trust him and put him first, you will grow. Your church's ministry will expand, and this will be an institution. Blessed God, because it ought to be. May God help us all, beginning with me, each of us, to this end. Amen.